Welcome to Biz Rocket Radio on this slightly rainy day here in Atlanta, post-election. Whether you're Democrat or Republican, we are done. And the next president is our current president, Barack Obama, and we're off and running. So hopefully all the bickering and politics kind of go behind us to a certain degree, and we can move forward. Today we've got a great show where we're going to be talking with Katie Goodwin. And Katie is a managing partner with GGG Partners, and I want to welcome Katie in, and thank you for coming in on such short notice.
Good morning.
Yeah, so maybe, Katie, you could tell us a little bit of background on you, where you came from, and how you got to where you are now.
Okay. First, you may have noticed I'm clearly not an American, so the election had very little impact on me.
Right.
But it did.
But you got a business over here.
I do have a business.
There is impact.
So it does count. Yeah, it does count. So I have been here. I call myself nearly a native. Been here about 20 years. Moved over originally for college. Then worked in private equity for a short while post-college. But for the last 10, 12 years, I've been working in the restructuring space with the firm GGG Partners. And we solely work with businesses in trouble. So it doesn't matter if they have financial trouble or operational trouble or whether they're small companies or publicly traded. We go in and try and fix them. So
now, Katie, are you doing the fixing for a sale typically, or is it fixing to try to keep the company going and stay under the same management and ownership?
It completely depends. Each company has its own set of challenges. And so when we start working with a company, it's setting those goals with the business owner up front. And it runs the gamut. So you've got companies that we can go in and they have a small amount of distress, whether that's building accounts payable or it's issues with inventory or perhaps they have some HR issues. And we can really work with that management team and fix the company, and then they can go on their way. Then we have, you know, the opposite end of the spectrum where a company management will call on a Wednesday and say, gosh, we can't make payroll on Friday. That means there's less options, and sometimes that's just bandaging it for a sale.
Right.
And then ownership does change.
Yeah. And those situations where you're bandaging it for a sale, do you have a whole team of people come in and go to work to try to get it squared away? Or is it something where it's just a few individuals kind of just trying to make it limp along and then try and get it on the selling blocks?
We are not a firm that sends in a team of people. My preference in working with any company is to really recognize the people in that company who are really good. So there's always a situation, even in a highly distressed environment, where there are good core employees. Mm. So you get them on side and you work with them, and sometimes it's really long days, but get them to really work with you because they have the most knowledge and they have institutional knowledge. And if you lose all of that institutional knowledge, your job is just more difficult. So as someone who comes in from the outside, you always have to remember that that you're not the smartest person in the world, right? There are smart people in the company, even though things may be difficult. Work with them. And then often it's to stabilize the business a little bit and get it ready for a sale. And we can work on sales very quickly. Some of those are structured sales. So if there is a vast amount of debt on the business, we'd look to structure that either through a Chapter 11 sale or through an assignment for the benefit of creditors or something that really cleans up the business, or there's a sales process outside that.
And let's just kind of stay on that situation a little bit. How... Mm-hmm. How do companies get into that position? What are there some commonalities that you find that happen on a regular basis where you're like, oh, well, I know what happened here. You know, they did this and then they did this. And here are the errors and kind of the turns that they made that were not the right turns that got them to where they are now.
There are two sets of issues. And I think we're in a little bit of a different time. So the world did change in 2007, 2008. Right. So if you were in construction or home products, anything in that area, and you saw your revenue, for example, half, that's a very difficult situation to manage around. So those are the external factors. Now, what makes those changes and external factors more difficult is that business owners and entrepreneurs are by definition optimists. So if they have a bad month, they look at their monthly sales for October and they've dropped. The natural instinct of an entrepreneur is to think that, gosh, next month will be better. And then they get to the end of the following month and it's not. So often they're 60 or 90 days into a real issue before they'll fully start to even address the problem. And often it goes months and months or years before they do. So by the time an entrepreneur really asks for help, they have bank debt that may be in default. They have inventory that's stale and old. They have accounts payable that have ballooned. They may be involved in some kind of litigation for non-payment. And lots of other things have escalated, which really comes down to that our best entrepreneurs are optimists, and they don't like to recognize that there's an issue.
Why is that? I mean, I get the optimism piece, but is there a pride issue? Is there a money issue? They can't afford the help? I mean, what is it that really causes the entrepreneur? Because it seems so obvious on the backside, right?
It does.
And we hear what you're saying all the time, and mm-hmm. it seems like, oh, duh, get help. Right?
Yeah.
Seems easy, but yet every entrepreneur seems to struggle desperately with this. Why?
I think it does. I think pride is a lot of it. If I look at, say, a profile of a, and it's difficult because our clients come in all shapes and sizes. So if we just profile maybe a chap in his mid-50s.
A chap.
Better than a boy.
Not a southern term.
Not a southern term.
Not one you hear every day on the radio station.
We're going to have to put like an index on the blog posting so we can define some of these terms.
A gentleman.
A gentleman.
Maybe sometimes a lady, but more flippant than
more often a chap. So take our chap, say mid-50s, who has started a business in his 30s. So for 20 years, he's worked very, very hard to build a successful enterprise, always done well. And let's say that in those 20 years, he has not been home much and has really focused on the business instead of families. So then you have a situation where his entire identity is wrapped up in a business. So it's not a business having issues and failing. It's him as an individual, in his view, failing.
Yeah.
And that takes a lot for anyone to just go to someone and say, hey, I'm having difficulties.
Right.
People don't like asking. So I think the other issue with business owners is that it's very lonely at the top. If you're the CEO of a corporation, especially a smaller one or middle market, you don't talk to other people. You have people that work for you, that are below you in the chain of command, that you don't discuss issues with. But you really don't have any peers. So it's very difficult for you to find help.
When is it that that somebody realizes that they need help? And how can they avoid not being too late?
Gosh, that was a question I wish I had a golden answer to, because things often do come to us 60 to 90 days after we'd like to. But I think it's when, if people can recognize basic things on their balance sheet and income statements, such as, gosh, do you see your bank debt rising? Do you see your accounts payable increasing?
Mm-hmm.
Is the inventory not turning as you would like it to? And I think there's a set of statistical data that if a business owner, without any emotion, looked at in a very clinical way on a monthly basis, they would be able to see the changes. But often, if one is dealing with an accountant that just gives a P&L on a monthly basis, it doesn't tell a whole
They're
lot.
They're not looking at it real in a lot of detail.
And the other thing that we find is that CEOs, especially of small to middle-sized businesses, are not the greatest frequently at really understanding the information that comes from those financial statements. So having a P&L isn't a lot of help to them, especially if they're looking at things like product lines. One may be losing money, one may be making money, but unless you break it down, they often don't know.
So you've worked with some small and kind of your resume says the kind of the medium-sized business is really your forte. Is that right?
Yes.
Tell us more about that business and what it looks like typically.
The typical middle-sized business?
Yeah, for you.
of course, it does vary. So it could be a business with, say, 30 to 100 million in revenues, and employees generally in more than one location. Our client base used to be more manufacturing focused, but of course, as there's very little manufacturing in the US now, it tends to be more service oriented now.
Mm-hmm.
So we see that shift, which is just a shift in where America is doing business.
Who's the person who usually calls you guys and says, "Man, we need some help"?
It is often a business owner, and it's I've seen a shift over the last 4 or 5 years. It is frequently a business owner where we have helped a friend or acquaintance business, and it tends to be, well, you know, I was speaking to Bob, and Bob said that we may be able to help you out, or you may be able to help us out. And that's a change, because we used to get introduced to companies by banks a lot, who mm-hmm. recognized that their clients needed help.
Mm-hmm.
But that has really shifted into a much more relational way of getting in contact with people.
Mm-hmm. So referrals really are where it's come from much more recently.
Yes, I don't think anyone would ever trust looking in the yellow pages to call someone and say, "Hey, come fix my business.
Come save my business.
Yeah. Come work with me."
Yeah. Have you seen the turnaround success stories, the situations where there's been just, you know, they're just missing a few tweaks and they really needed to just get those things right and then things took off again? Do you have examples of that?
Yes, yes. Yeah, because we're actually pretty good at what we do.
it actually works.
Else we wouldn't be in business,
right? Well, consulting thing actually does something.
Frequently, I mean, when you look at, especially post 2007, 2008, and you see businesses where there was frequently a revenue shift downwards, and lots of those revenue shift downwards were not small. It wasn't a 5% decrease in revenue. It was a 30 or 40% decrease in revenue. So then I'm thinking of one in particular. It's a private company, so I won't tell you the name.
Sure.
But it was working with them to then realign all the costs of their businesses, both nationally and internationally. They had an international component in line with their revenues. Working to really get rid of customers that were not making money. I think that frequently businesses get into the habit of working with certain customers, and unless they do that customer-by-customer profitability analysis, they just continue to sell habitually. So we work with them through the cost-cutting exercise, through the customer analysis, and then we really worked with them to, over a period of about 18 months, reduce their overall debt levels to an acceptable level for a smaller business.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really challenging. It involved some inventory sales, some reduction in machinery and equipment, some reduction in capacity, and rationalizing that whole business. But really, with the reduced revenue levels, just getting it in line with what that business should look like. You know, as a company with revenues that were approximately half the level that they were previously.
Hmm. When you're looking at these levels, and some of our listeners out there may be thinking, "God, you know what, I'm not sure whether my levels are in the right place or not, or whether this is something that I need to really pay more attention to." Do you have any trigger points? Do you have any numbers or percentages that you say, like, these numbers should be in this area, and if they're not, you may have some issues coming forward?
I think it depends on the business and what the assets are. And when I look at, say, if you look at bank leverage, right, for a business, when you look at your current level of bank debt, could you pick up the phone and call Bank of America and Wells Fargo, and would they be happy to refinance you?
Mm-hmm.
If the answer is no, you may be over-leveraged.
Right.
And there are lots of businesses that are not appropriate for bank debt and have to go to the non-bank lenders. But that's a sign. In terms of the other debt levels, for example, accounts payable, are you keeping within terms? Are you on COD or CBD, cash before delivery, with your vendors? And those are all, those are things that business owners know. But I think especially in the current environment where we have business owners who are really, really tired 5 or 6 years into a recession and who are very used to hard negotiations with their lender and juggling payables on a daily basis, there's a forgetfulness perhaps that that is not normal and that is not a good way to do business.
Mm-hmm. Since 08, you've had a huge trimming of fat within corporate America, mm-hmm. large companies especially, and the news is all over that. Have you found that that's the same case in that middle market that you're working in where they really trimmed as much as they can on the fat level and there's not a lot more, they can't cut a lot more employees, their payroll is where it really should be? Or do you still see some wiggle room and, you know, payroll's maybe a little bit high for what you guys are producing, you really need to be able to trim back?
I have seen most companies, probably 80, 90% of the people that come to us, they've already trimmed. And many have trimmed too far at this point.
Right.
And sometimes it's sitting with a business owner and saying, okay, not having anyone in sales and marketing really isn't
a good idea.
Really not good for your business. People aren't knocking on the front door and saying, hey, can I buy your product? And then the other one that we see... I had this one come up with a client last week. They had trimmed back their accounting department so that they had no one in the credit department. So they're selling to customers with no idea of their credit background.
Oh, nice.
And then, of course, they wonder why those receivables are uncollectible. And so those instances, it comes back to, okay, where are the sensible add backs? Where are you going to make money or not lose money by having a few more people in place?
Right. So, Katie, let's say that somebody comes into your business and they say, you know what, I need some help. They call you up. What would they expect to go through? What would be the process that they go through that would help them uncover the areas that they needed to either A, fix, or B, you know, it's a fire sale kind of thing. They're just trying to figure things out. Is it different?
There's a basic process, which is common for all. Of the situations that we get into. So it's coming in and doing a full assessment of the financial and operational condition of the business. And if we start off with the basic question, does the business cash flow? Is it making money or not? I don't care about a P&L. It's irrelevant. But the way I tend to look at a business is, tell me how much cash you have today, what cash you have coming in, what cash you have going out, where's your ending cash? And let's run that forward. And we usually look at it on a 13-week basis and run that forward for a period. Now, that gives us the answer that either it cash flows or it doesn't, right? If it doesn't cash flow, we look at what can be done to make it cash flow. So we can work with that company and look at where it's spending money and where it's selling. And can we get it to a cash flow positive position? Now, the answer to that question is either yes, right? So we work on a turnaround, or no, right? This business cannot be made to cash flow. And then it's a conversation with management and owners because a business is a business to make money. If not, it's a hobby. If they would like to...
Not for profit.
If they would like to continue running their business on a cash flow negative basis, they need to put money into it. Or they need to get other people to put money into it. But you can't run a business that's losing money. It will die a natural death. And so in those situations, it's talking to the owner about whether they would like to shut it down or whether they would like to try to sell it in some manner or form.
Mm-hmm.
But those are obviously difficult conversations to have with a business owner. Who frequently, even when they've called us, is still on the optimistic side.
Right.
But laying those numbers out on a cash basis for the 13-week period, which is how we look at the world, will tell us whether we can make something work or not.
I mean, it really comes, cash flow comes down to really three things. Selling whatever you're selling,
mm-hmm.
collecting on what you're selling.
That's good.
And then expenses.
Yes.
Right. I mean, that's as basic as it gets. Right now, what are you seeing more issues with? The selling, the expenses, or the collecting?
I think it's a combination of all. I think that companies have got used to that lower sales level and have adjusted expenses down.
Right.
There are some issues still on the collectability of receivables. That can be managed by not having customer concentrations and things like that. So what we often come down to as a final analysis is, gosh, we can get this business to cash flow, or it's been limping along on a marginally cash flow positive basis. Mm-hmm. We can make this work. However, we have $1, $2, $3, $5 million of old payables that have built up over a period of time. Mm-hmm. And how do we address the sins of the past? And those can be addressed by ongoing cash flow. But sometimes it's very difficult. You can sit and look at it, and it may be a situation where if you run your business perfectly for the next 20 years, then we get your vendor debt down to an acceptable level, mm-hmm. Which either makes sense to a business owner or not. Or we need to look at going back to those vendors and negotiating some kind of either long terms or a discount, or looking at some kind of structured process like an assignment for the benefit of creditors or a Chapter 11.
Mm-hmm. Well, throw in a fourth idea in there. I mean, I get the sales, I get the expenses and the collecting, but mm-hmm. but a fourth thing that I'm curious if you see this, where we've seen companies that aren't aware of their profit margins. Competition has entered the market, and they keep trying to outprice their competition. You know, the wholesale prices of things that they're buying have shifted, and we've seen clients out there that have businesses where they are selling a product and don't realize that at the end of the day, they are losing money on it, not making money. I mean, are you finding that?
Not generally at a total company level, but with big business segments. So we have a client right now, and they have two segments. It's a contracting business. They have a residential segment, which is massively profitable. They have a commercial segment, which is a much more attractive business to the business owners, but it has very narrow margins. It's very big dollars. If anything goes wrong on one of those projects, it's a big loss. And because the receivables take so long to collect, and those receivables are financed with a factoring company, by the time they actually look at the jobs, those larger jobs, on a total basis, they make a loss on every single one. Getting to that information is not the easiest on project work, but making large losses on segments is frequent.
How long do you typically engage with a company?
Completely varies. Yeah. So if I look at this year, I spent 7 months on a project in South Carolina, which was getting a company into Chapter 11 in February, restructuring and selling it, reorganized out of Chapter 11 in August. So that was a fairly concentrated turnaround process. Our typical engagement is somewhere between 90 days and maybe on the outside 18 months. Mm-hmm. And it tends to be a great deal of work on the front end.
Right.
And then with most management teams, again, I'm a believer in institutional knowledge and that people really are smart and can do their jobs if they're given the tools to do them. Mm-hmm. It comes down to working on special projects and monitoring if something goes wrong, because that habit of having someone in your business on a weekly basis and checking that everything is correct and checking those statistics and that everything's on track usually is enough to keep everyone focused on turning a business around and not focused on anything else.
Yeah. Obviously, there's a lot of competition in your area.
We have no competition.
Just nobody.
We're the best.
Nobody does it like you guys do. So what makes you guys stand out from other companies that do something similar? Nothing like what you do.
Similar. I think that where we're different is really the attitude that we go in and we don't staff up. So when we go into a job as a firm, it's one person, and there may be a second person if it's a larger project. So that means that we're pretty efficient. We also are not We're not a consulting firm in terms of we go in and we give a pretty bound report to a business owner and say, hey, here's what's wrong with your business. Go take care of it. We step in and we work shoulder to shoulder with a business owner to make sure that we get the best result for them. And our goal is to get in, do our job, and leave. So it's more the attitude of a true workout firm, because we don't have add-on services to sell to someone. So we're not a consulting business where we're then going to try and sell a customer ongoing tax advice or sales strategy advice or anything else. We are very, very happy to be gone. And we recognize that people don't like to have to call us. It's like calling the fire department. Yeah. Gosh, really didn't want to call you, but having your number was handy, which is a
kind of nice to know.
Yeah. Nice to know, yeah.
Well, that's good. Good stuff. One of the last things that we always like to ask our guests is for a pearl of wisdom. So if you are going to give a pearl to the audience that's out there, what would it be surrounding your business or just life in general?
I think if the one piece of advice that I regularly give business owners when they are looking at going into a customer negotiation or a lender negotiation, especially in this environment, business owners have become, they've lost their energy and they've lost their ability to ask for what they really need and for what they want. And so it's actually going into a meeting and having a little bit more pride again and a little bit more energy and asking for what they need and want. And I'll give a specific example, dealing with a company that actually manufactured light bulbs. And we looked at it, and I said to the CEO, go in and ask for a 50%, if your customers will accept a 50% price increase. And, of course, the business owner was like, well, no, we can't do that to our customers. He'd become afraid of actually asking for what he needed. But went in, asked for what he needed, and his customers said yes. And I think that standing up tall and remembering that that as a business owner you go into business because you're good and that you can make things work and standing up again and asking for things is what will ultimately make people's business work as they sort it out.
And how it's a great comment, but a follow-up to that.
That wasn't really a pearl of wisdom, was it?
It was. It was, but I want more. It was a pearl. I want two. when you regain that spine, what is it that clicks for business owners to say, you know what, you're right. I need to stand back up and say, this is what I need to do.
I think it's especially when you see a company get through a very distressed situation, and that business owner, who may have been dealing day in, day out with people calling them for money and juggling payables and terminating employees and getting through all of that. You get them through that and you tell them that they're done. And then they start to think again. They start to really be the great entrepreneurs that they were when they started their business. And I think sometimes that they forget that they could be that good. And getting them from point A, where they're distressed and they're looking at potentially shutting down their business, to point B, where they're successful again,
right,
is a really good thing.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Thank you.
Katie Goodman, we appreciate your time today. Again, Katie's a managing partner for GGG Partners. And Katie, any contact information that you'd like to leave for our listeners?
Anyone can reach me at any time on my cell phone, which is 404-293-0137.
Okay. Well, thank you again for coming in. We appreciate your time. And to our listeners, we appreciate you taking the time out this morning. Until next week, be safe.
John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA. SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia, 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation. We'll be right back.